So applying for a job is a very strange thing. Or perhaps more accurately, the way that we have to present ourselves in order to apply for a job is a very strange thing. We put our whole lives on these 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, neatly typed and laid out in resume form. And then we send them off, and they arrive in the inbox of some muckety-muck sitting in a big chair, chewing on the end of a pen, and scanning our materials to see whether or not we are a fit with the organization. Who would you be if the only information somebody had about you was what was on your resume? What could they glean about your life as a human being? If you had my resume in your hand, I'll go through this exercise for you, you would get the following snapshot of me. Ashley Ariel Phillips Horan, way too many names, Chicago, Illinois. Education, Master of Divinity, Meadville Lombard Theological School 2012. Bachelor of Arts with a concentration in Francophone African cultures, Harvard University, 2005. High school diploma, Convent of the Visitation School, Mendota Heights, Minnesota, 2000. If you scanned further down the page, you would learn that I have worked as an intern, a campus minister, and a religious education consultant in a number of UU congregations from Boston to Seattle. You would see that I spent 2 years teaching junior high Spanish in the Minneapolis public schools, that I worked for many summers teaching French and taking high school kids on wilderness canoe trips, and that I serve now as the consulting minister of the Universalist Unitarian Church of Joliet, Illinois. Skip down, and under that nice catch-all category of special interests, skills, and activities, conveniently located at the top of the second page for your perusing convenience, you would see that I have a background in theater and improv comedy. I'm sure you're shocked to hear that, having heard me preach a few times. You would see that I've been involved with the leadership of several social justice-oriented causes and organizations. And as my prospective employer, you might or might not be interested to read that I've won a few awards, I've always had a good GPA, and I can provide you with solid references. Now, after reading this carefully crafted snapshot, you would weigh my background and perceived abilities against the job description that you've posted. And you would have enough information to know, at least superficially, whether I would be a candidate for the position. But would you have any idea what sort of human being I am? Would you know who mentored me and taught me things that have shaped my mind and my heart? What communities hold me in relationship and nurture my spirit? Would you know whom I love and trust and share with, where I find purpose, or who treasures me enough to offer me both critique and forgiveness? No. Those dimensions of personhood are all about relationship, and our resumes really are intended to frame us as individuals. Self-sufficient, accomplished, independent people. People who are unhindered by messy relationships and circumstances from the past. People who are ready to show up fully formed and eager and say, I am here, I am skilled and ambitious, and there is nothing to hold me back from giving myself over to this job that perfectly matches your description. 100% choose me, choose me, choose me, choose me. I call this the myth of the standalone human being. And a myth it might be, but it is certainly a prevailing notion in our time. When you stand in the supermarket check out and look at Time magazine, you watch the profiles of the person of the year. And they're written to make us think that these are extraordinary individuals who accomplish superhuman feats of nation building and democracy and peacemaking all by themselves. Watching the news, whether it's a conservative network or a liberal one, you will likely hear pundits talking about how President Obama has either derailed or saved the American economy and all sorts of other systems entirely by himself. Even in our own Unitarian Universalist tradition, there's a strong thread emphasizing this standalone human being. One of our most influential and oft-quoted UU heroes is Ralph Waldo Emerson, the 19th century Boston Unitarian minister who became world famous as a philosopher and as an essayist and as a founder of the Transcendentalist movement. In his writings, like those of many of the Transcendentalists at that time, Emerson emphasized self-reliance. The idea that the truly free mind needs nothing but itself to discern truth, pursue enlightenment, and make decisions. In fact, Emerson went so far as to argue that not only do human beings not need intimacy, but that we're corrupted by it. Every man alone is sincere, he said. At the entrance of the second person, hypocrisy begins. Now, old Ralph gave us plenty of things that are still with us, many blessings. He helped Unitarians affirm each person's ability to gauge for themselves what is real and true and good. As he said, to trust the God within, not just the God of tradition and authority. But Emerson was also a parish minister who left his congregation because he had no taste for the intimacy and interdependence of community life. He preferred the lecture hall full of hundreds of strangers to the pews full of his own parishioners. He had difficulty maintaining friendships, and his marriage was a hot mess. So, why have we based so much of our modern Unitarian Universalism on the thinking of folks like Emerson? As the Reverend Forrest Church once said about Emerson's influence, to build an institution on a foundation laid by an anti-institutionalist is a little like hiring a demolition expert for your architect. In some of our Unitarian Universalist congregations, Emersonian individualism is still a core value. In these places, you might hear the greeters say to newcomers something along the lines of, "Welcome! You will love this place. You can believe whatever you want, and nobody will tell you you're wrong." I have to admit that every time I hear that particular spiel, which is more often than I would like, my heart hurts. Not because I secretly pine for some miracle in which all Unitarian Universalists suddenly woke up believing the same thing, but because the thing that I love most about our faith, that thing that hooked me as a child and pushed me to seek out a congregation in every city I've ever lived in, that thing that brought me to the ministry, is exactly the opposite of that myth of the standalone human being. What I love about Unitarian Universalism is that it has taught me through word and experience that it's actually impossible to be self-reliant. It's impossible to be a standalone human being, and it's impossible to understand a person outside of the context of the communities of people who have shaped them and loved them into being, to quote Mr. Rogers. So when someone asks me what Unitarian Universalism is, I have what is commonly referred to as an elevator speech. Do any of you have one of these? That short version? Yes. How many of you wish you had one but have failed miserably a million times trying to have one? Yeah. I'm cheating a little bit because mine's written down. And also, I'm from Chicago, and so we have really tall buildings. So this is the elevator speech for the Willis Tower, okay? So I tell people that although we embrace the wisdom from all of the world's spiritual traditions, we come from liberal Christian roots on both our Unitarian and Universalist sides. From the Unitarians, we take an understanding that God or the sacred is one, not separate from the world, not some archaic being in the sky working in history, but everywhere and in everything, and called by a thousand different names, all of which are true. From the Universalists, I say that we inherit an understanding that all people are born loved and worthy and with the capacity to bring wholeness and goodness into the world. Then I explain that we are a covenantal as opposed to a creedal people, meaning that we care more about how we are together than what we believe in common. That every person has the ability to discern religious truth for themselves, but that this individual discernment must take place in the context of a community that challenges us, that heals us, and that keeps us in balance. I say that these understandings of God and of human nature and of covenantal community then push us to work our whole lives for right relationship with one another, with the larger world, and with the earth. And all of this, I say, is rooted in a understanding that we are fundamentally and inextricably interconnected. Now, that's a lot of words. But a few years ago, I stumbled upon what I think is a near-perfect metaphor for the core of our faith, which expresses all of those things that I was just trying to say. In Utah, just south of the Wasatch Mountains, there is a swath of aspen trees that covers more than 100 acres of land. And in this forest are more than 50,000 individual trees, each of which has that characteristic aspen look, the white bark and the black marks, the branches that stretch, and the famous quaking leaves that tremble in the western wind. Now, if you're not a biologist, you might look at this and it might seem to you like any other northern forest. But if you were to dig your fingers into the soil and get down and uncover the roots, you would find something extraordinary. You would see that the roots of one tree are the roots of the next tree, and the next, and the next, and the next. In fact, biologists have discovered that this entire area is actually one giant interconnected organism, and it is the largest living thing on Earth. Each individual tree is actually an offshoot of this massive, sprawling underground root structure, not a separate entity. Biologists have named this giant organism Pando, P-A-N-D-O, which comes from a Latin word meaning I spread. Through their research, they have discovered that there are very few standing aspens, individual trees that are more than about 75 years old. But the root structures of Pando and other aspen forests like it, they believe that they may actually be up to a million years old. As one scientist puts it, in principle, they may even be immortal, dying essentially only from invasive disease or the deterioration of the environment, rather than from some internal clock. Now, this is a lot like the understanding of Unitarian Universalism that I grew up with. Each of us is our own being on the surface, unique knots in our bark, branches that fork in different directions. Some of us lean one way, some of us the other. But under the surface, in that soil from which grows our being and our essence, we are quite literally one. We hold each other up, we give each other sustenance, and we draw our lifeblood from a common source that is larger than any one of us, larger than all of us, and larger even than space and time and memory. Now, this understanding is what makes the myth of the standalone human being so flawed. How ridiculous would it be for an individual aspen tree to present itself in resume form like we do? Name, aspen number 43,721, Pondo Grove, Utah. Accomplishments, growing straight and tall for 53 years, no leaf blights, good bark. 26 major limbs, 253 branches, 5,625 twigs, and 60,891 leaves. Special interests and skills. Soaking in sunlight, providing shade, sprouting new shoots, and turning a beautiful golden color in autumn. Recipient of the 2009 Award for Best Photosynthesizer. If you read that, you would have as little context for that individual aspen as you do for me, having heard pieces of my resume, or any of our individual resumes. The Latin verb from which Pondo takes its name is pondere, to spread out. But that verb also means to lay open, to fling wide, to disclose, to reveal, to unfold. So what would your resume look like if you wrote it in what I'll call Pondo form? What root structures would you describe? How old would you say that you were? Who or what would you name as your pedigree, your ground of being? Mine would be full of stories reaching back generations and intertwined with a future that I will not live long enough to see. It would list mentors, not degrees, formational places instead of addresses, commitments, not accomplishments. I would talk of Irish immigrant ancestors and small-town Catholic families, grandparents who built nuclear submarines and wrote articles for small-town papers, teachers who taught me about art and history and storytelling and instilled in me an inability to walk through the world without asking why. It would list small villages in Cameroon, the south side of Chicago, the mountains of Nepal, and the lakes and streams of northern Minnesota. Malcolm X and bell hooks and the survivors of Stonewall. It would point out Unitarian Universalist Sunday school classrooms and sanctuaries and general assemblies and seminaries. An individual aspen cannot live if it is severed from its root structure. And it is impossible to be human by ourselves. I am a Unitarian Universalist because our faith reminds me that, like the Bantu proverb from southern Africa says, I am because we are. Not the small we of our congregation or our denomination, but the larger we of all people spanning time and space and difference. I am a Unitarian Universalist because our faith keeps this belief alive and concrete in my life, in the real communities of people to whom I belong, from whom I learn, and alongside whom I minister. To be a part of religious community is in itself an audacious proclamation that none of us is truly whole outside of our relationships with one another and with that sacred mystery that is larger than anything any of us can name. To be a part of a religious community is to affirm that we owe our being to more than our own unique experiences, and that we commit together to the shared enterprise of pandere, of spreading out, laying open, flinging wide, disclosing, revealing, unfolding. A process that began long before our individual life shoots emerged, and one that will continue long after we return to the earth from which we sprang. My friends, as we move through this world that would have us believe otherwise, let us never forget this knowledge of inescapable interconnection. Let us resist the illusion of standalone isolation. Grounded in common soil, grateful for this promise of radical belonging, rooted belonging, let us live our lives with an abiding trust, offering to the world a constant reminder that our roots are interwoven, holding us up, binding us together, and revealing in and through and among us the abundant blessings of this one precious life. May it be so. Blessed be Ashe and Amen.